So, Mr. Liu, if we could continue now. I believe that it was just about at this point that Mr. Bunch returned to New York and was replaced as the Secretary General's representative in Congo, temporarily, I believe, by Andrew Cordier. Is that right?
Yes. The Bunch was returning to New York on or about the 27th of August. I think he returned to New York because he had a number of important commitments there, and also because he was in poor health. And the Secretary General then decided to replace him by Ambassador Dayal of India. But Dayal was not available as yet, and Dayal would be available around the 5th of September. So in the intervening time, they needed a acting special representative, and Dag Hammarskjöld decided to appoint Andrew Cordier to that post.
Now, by that time, had an agreement been reached with the Congolese government on the status of the UN forces?
Oh, well, at the very beginning, we had a outline of the agreement, the status of force agreement signed. That was done just a few days after the arrival of the first troops. It was signed by Ralph Bunch for the UN and by Gizenga, who was the Vice Prime Minister, and Bomboko, the Foreign Minister.
So that had been arranged.
It was an outline of agreement, and it was decided a fuller agreement would be concluded later on. So I think that question was settled.
Could you describe what you recall as the situation in the Congo at this point when Cordier arrived?
Well, the situation was quite tense. The relationship between the UN and the Congolese government, that is led by Lumumba, were tense, were not good. There were a number of incidents. I mentioned earlier that incident at the airport when a Canadian logistic staff was beaten up, roughed up by a Congolese soldier. And we have a number of incidents. During the months of July, around the 20th of July, Lumumba sent NC, that is the Army Nationale Congolaise, the Congolese Army, to Kasai to put down a kind of uprising by Balubas. And there was a massacre of more than 1,000 civilians in the village, which Dag Hammarskjöld qualified as genocide. So the situation is quite tense. On this, Bunch left and Andrew Cordier arrived to take over temporarily the direction of ONUC.
And you mentioned that the Congolese army had been sent to the Kasai. Most of the troops that were loyal to Lumumba then were outside of Leopoldville at that.
That's right, yes. They were fighting against the Kasai, and there were some troops also in North Katanga.
Right. Now, at this point, the United Nations staff in Leopoldville, presumably in contact with the Secretary General, I assume considered one of its major responsibilities to be the maintenance of some kind of public order. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Well, that was very much within the mandate of the UN. We were to assist the government in maintaining law and order. And we did, you see. We did with the troops, and also with an important body of policemen civilian police from Ghana.
Who functioned as civilian peacekeepers then?
That's right. They were policemen, you see, and they were working in cooperation with the Congolese police.
And it was at this point then that the question arose about the airport in Leopoldville.
Not yet. That came when the constitutional crisis started. That crisis broke out on the 5th of September. In the afternoon of that day, around 6 o'clock, President Kasa-Boubou went to the radio station of Leopoldville and broadcast a statement, during which he said that the government were ineffective, was not fulfilling its responsibility, and therefore he decided to dismiss Prime Minister Lumumba, in accordance with an article of the Loi Fondamentale, the Basic Law, which serves as the constitution of the new Republic of the Congo. And then, 2 hours later, we heard from the radio station a statement by Lumumba, who said that he rejected the decision of Kasa-Boubou as illegal, and he in turn dismissed the president. And then these two statements set off what we call the constitutional crisis. Lumumba, on the same day, made two other speeches at the radio, very violent one, calling the population of Leopoldville to rise and to fight with the government against the subversive elements. And at the same time, there were a lot of unrest in Leopoldville because there were pro-Lumumba and pro-Kasa-Boubou elements fighting against each other.
And if I could go back just 1 minute, before Mr. Kasa-Boubou made his announcement on the radio, had he consulted with the UN representatives there in Leopoldville?
Yes, well, he saw Cordier. He was not telling Cordier that he was going to dismiss Lumumba and so on, but he was going to do something in order to put things right, as he said. And Cordier cautioned him to act very, very prudently and not to go beyond the constitutional law, the loi fondamentale.
Was there a general feeling among the UN people there at this point that actually it would be easier for the UN to achieve its mandate of restoring some kind of order and stability if Lumumba were no longer around?
I guess so. There is some certain feeling that if Lumumba could change his policy, or someone more amenable to cooperation with the UN were taking over, it would be better. But that was only a thought of some dealing with the UNUC, you see.
Did the president, Kasa-Boubou, make any suggestion with regard to the airport or to the radio station before any action was taken?
Oh, no, no. After the beginning of the constitutional crisis, we didn't see any leaders for the time being. We received many calls for protection and so on, and we told them that we would do whatever we could to help. On the other hand, our personnel, our force is very limited. We couldn't naturally give special protection to everyone. Now, during that same night, among rumors and information of unrest and rioting, within the UN, Cordier met with his principal advisors. I recall there was a very tense meeting. We were about 20. In addition to Cordier, we had Linnaire, who was the special representative, the deputy force commander, General Ketani of Morocco, the chief of staff of the UN force, General Yasu of Ethiopia. We had General Ricky, who, as I said before, was the military advisor of the Secretary General, who was sent to the Congo to help Onduk. I was there, and there were quite a number of people. And we were discussing how we could help maintain law and order, ensure the protection of the civilian population, and in particular of the political leaders. And it was a very hard decision. You see, when we discuss, as we do now, in the serenity of the room in Bronxville or in New York, when everything is all right, there was no problem, things look different. But here, we were amid a pandemonium. See, there were constantly telephone calls asking for our help, informing us of incidents, the fighting, and we thought we have to do something about it. And the danger of a bloodbath was very real. So at that time, we thought it was difficult to remember who made the suggestion before. We thought that we should close the airport to prevent Congolese armies stranded outside Leopoldville to come in Leopoldville to fight against the pro-Lumumba or pro-Kasavu element of the army. We should also do something about those very inflammatory statements being broadcast from the radio station. And we thought that the best way to do it is to close it. And finally, after a lot of hesitation, Andrew Cordier decided both to close the airport and the radio station. In hindsight, it was a mistake. But at that time, in Leopoldville, we thought that that was the only way to prevent the bloodbath in Leopoldville.
And was there an immediate reaction from the various diplomatic representatives in Leopoldville at that point?
Yes, the next day. Yeah. The next day.
And what was this reaction?
A number of African diplomatic representatives. I think it was diplomats from Ghana, Guinea, Tunisia, who came and said that they against those decisions.
And I presume Mr. Lumumba was very unhappy.
Yes, was close. He was very unhappy.
And did he make his unhappiness known, or were relations already broken between
them? Oh, the relations were already bad, but it became worse.
It became worse. And in effect, at this point, in the view of the United Nations representatives, there was not a constitutional government. Is that correct?
At that time, there was no constitutional government. No, no. The situation was very confused. Very confused. So the president was not operative. The prime minister was also not operative. The parliament theoretically was still there, but they couldn't meet. So the situation is very confused. On the other hand, when I say that relationship between the UN and the Prime Minister became worse, that was true. On the other hand, Lumumba asked protection from the UN, as did the President Kasavubu and many, many other political leaders.
And this protection was in fact given to Lumumba.
That's right. We decided, or Cordier decided, to give special protection to Kasavubu and Lumumba. because they were very special, not only because of their high positions, but also because we consider these two leaders as essential for the UN effort, which we were going to start to achieve national reconciliation.
And these were the only two then that were given the protection?
Well, what we did is this. We said the UN force is too small to give special protection to all political leaders. So what we did is I received all the calls from them. We told them that we will take their addresses where they are, and we will ask UN patrols, and we are going to increase the patrols to go near their places and give a check from time to time. And this is the protection we give to the normal political leaders. Then we make two exceptions, and those were the guards which were put at the disposal for the protection of Kasavubu and Lumumba.
And at this point, had you come into contact yet with Mr. Mobutu?
Well, in fact, Mobutu came to see us, and he was very worried. He was scared, even, and he wanted to go back to his village. And we told him, no, you should stay here, and you are the army, you are the chief of staff of the army. The army must be impartial and keep a impartial and neutral position during the crisis. But you are very important because the army, in this case, would be a sort of guarantee of the state. And then he agreed to stay. At that point, that was the only thing we told him. But I got the information later on that after seeing us, he went to see Lumumba, because he was a protege of Lumumba, after all. He became a secretary of state, you see, in Lumumba's government for information. So he went to Lumumba. But Lumumba didn't see him. Lumumba was too busy. And he waited for a long time, and finally he left. And he went to see Kasavubu. And Kasavubu received him immediately, was very friendly to him. And I think these two meetings shaped his policy later on.
But at this point, you didn't recognize him as the person who was going to lead the coup?
Oh, no, not at all. I think he was the person who wanted to leave.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to go back to his village.
In this connection, I wanted to ask, what were the major sources of information for the United Nations staff there concerning political developments within the Congolese community?
Well, our major source is really the two ministers with whom we had the close relations, that's Bomboko and Kenza. They inform us of what happened, and they told us of the positions of the various governments. Naturally, we saw Kasavubu and Lumumba, and we discussed with them, and we advise restraint.
But you did not have any information flowing to you from the diplomatic missions, for example, from the U.S.
Yes, yes. Well, we were also in close contact with the various ambassadors, particularly Ambassador Timberlane of the United States and Ambassador Scott of the United Kingdom.
How would you characterize Ambassador Timberlane, by the way?
Well, I know him. I did not know him too well. You see, I knew him because I attended the meeting he had with Dr. Bunch, with Cordier. He, of course, followed the U.S. policy,
and therefore he was in favor of Kasa-Bubu and rather hostile to Lumumba.
Was there any effort made on his part or on the part of the Belgians or others to influence the United Nations to be more supportive of Kasa-Bubu, or was this simply a natural course of events?
No, I don't think so. I think after the outbreak of the constitutional crisis, they didn't give any advice there.
So we come now to a situation where Mr. Lumumba is in his house being protected by United Nations guards, and he decides to leave. What was your position in the United Nations on that? That there was no responsibility to keep him there, or what was the...
Yes. When we agreed to give him a measure of protection by assigning a small unit of UN soldiers, the mandate of the UN force was to be stationed around his residence. We were to prevent any attack from outside against the residence with the purpose of harming the Prime Minister. But they were also instructed not to restrict in any way the freedom of movement of the Prime Minister, because it was important to show that the Prime Minister was not a prisoner of the UN. And we were there only to protect him. Now, soon after the arrival of the UN soldiers around the residence of the Prime Minister, Kasa-Bubu, with his now ally Mobutu, sent a group of Congolese soldiers to arrest Lumumba. So, and then when they were prevented from doing so by the UN soldiers, they surrounded the UN soldiers. So around the residence, we have two rings, the residence, and then the first ring of UN soldiers, and then the second ring of the Congolese soldiers. But it's not tight, because some people came and went from the residence outside. In fact, Lumumba went outside his residence on several occasions. In fact, on one occasion, he went to the Congolese army camp in order to rally the Congolese soldiers. And then he was surrounded by the Baluba soldiers who wanted to kill him because of the recent massacre of their tribesmen in Kasai. And Lumumba was saved only by the Ghanaian soldiers who were at the camp. In fact, there was a very tense meeting. The special representative, now Ambassador Dayal, and myself, we went there, and we saw him. And Lumumba was very mad at the Ghanaians, because the Ghanaians didn't want him to leave.
Because they were afraid for his safety.
Because they were afraid of safety, and he was mad at Colonel Enkwa, who is the commander of the Ghanaian contingent, who later became the president of Ghana. Colonel Enkwa was trying to protect him, and he was being criticized by Lumumba. Anyway, we, after rather long talks, Lumumba agreed to leave and to return to his residence under UN protection.
Going back just for a minute, at this point, Ambassador Dayal has replaced Mr. Cordier as the special representative.
Yes, that's
General.
Right.
But before that, when Mr. Cordier took the decision to close the airport and to shut down the radio, was there consultation with New York? Was there close consultation with New York?
Well, there were constant exchanges of cables. In the cables, nothing was said. But Cordier told me that he had a special code with the Secretary General. And then he was reporting regularly to the secretary. And he said that the decision had the endorsement of Dag Hammarskjöld. But of course, that is very difficult to prove because we don't have any cable raising this question, since everything seemingly was in secret code, which no one knew except Hammarskjöld and Cordier.
And what was Dayal's attitude when he got there and took over under these circumstances?
Well, he was extremely unhappy. I think he was even mad at the circumstances. He said that if he had known the problems of the Congo and the relationship between the UN and the Congolese government, he would not have accepted the job.
And basically, he did not approve then of what Mr. Cordier had done.
No, no.
By this time, if we go back to New York for a moment now, the situation in New York was also extremely difficult. It was very difficult
yes.
to get any agreement out of the Security Council, I think,
yes.
or even the General Assembly. Were there repercussions in the Congo among the staff of the political dissension in New York and the fact that it was impossible to get, Secretary General couldn't really get guidance from the Security Council?
Yes, I think we were a little bit lost, you see, naturally. But we have our chief, who is the Secretary General. Therefore, we relied on him. And the Secretary General, of course, was very unhappy about the decision concerning the airport and the radio station. But Hammarskjöld, being Hammarskjöld, never accused publicly Cordier, because he accepted the responsibility.
And at this point, I think, again, in New York, a committee was formed at, I suppose, the Secretary General's suggestion, composed of the representatives of the troop donor countries. Was this a useful undertaking as far as the field operations were concerned, the fact that there was at least some body that the Secretary General could work with and get some guidance from?
Oh, yes, it's very useful. In fact, the you're referring to the advisory committee on the Congo.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
That, in fact, the advisory committee of the Congo is has a precedent. When Hammarskjöld created the UNEF-1, the first UN emergency force, which was the first UN peacekeeping force, he had established an advisory committee composed of representatives of contributing countries. In this case, as soon as the UN force was set up in the Congo, he had a similar advisory committee, and that committee met quite often to advise on the Secretary General on what to do. It was a very useful organ, because it shared with the Secretary General the responsibility for this extremely complex and important operation.
And in the Congo itself, by this time, a number of Soviet transport planes had arrived, and other equipment. Was the United Nations able in any way to influence the way in which this equipment was utilized?
No. As I said earlier, when Dag Hammarskjöld set up the assistance, the civilian assistance operation, his idea was that all assistance must be channeled through the UN. But when the split developed between the UN and Lumumba requested Soviet help, and the Soviet sent some help, not all the help requested by Hammarskjöld, but they sent...
By Lumumba, you mean?
By Lumumba. But they sent a large number of trucks. That was used by Lumumba. We were not able to influence the use of those vehicles.
Now, there were still, at this point, Belgian forces in Katanga, is that right?
Yes. Now, Belgium troops was leaving faster because in early... No, we are in September now.
Right, right.
No. All the Belgium troops left.
Even Katanga.
Even Katanga. But the Belgian government assigned a number of Belgian military officers as military advisor for Tshombe. So there are a number of military advisors, and but there were no Belgian troops.
No troops as such. Because Mr. Dayal, at one point, I believe, in November, issued a report criticizing the continued presence of Belgian technicians and advisors.
That's right.
And they were in Katanga.
Those were advisors in Katanga. But the Belgian technicians were coming back to Leopold. And I think the criticism of Dayad include those also.
I see. Now, I judge that Mr. Dayal was viewed with some suspicion by some of the Western missions in the Congo.
Yes, definitely, particularly by the U.S. and the U.K. embassies.
Why was that?
Well, I really don't know, but I believe that Dayal, as an Indian diplomat, has taken his stand rather in favor of the Congolese the Lumumba group, although later on his relation with Lumumba will deteriorate. But when he came, I think his stand was very similar to the stand adopted by the Indian government. I think this might be a reason.
Which was in fact sympathetic to Lumumba.
It was sympathetic to Lumumba, and in fact, Dayan wanted to be impartial, but I think his sympathy went to the Lumumba side of the government.
Now we reached the point here, I think, in November, when Lumumba left his house.
Yeah. Yes.
And didn't come back. Was there an appreciation on the part of the UN staff there that this was a serious development?
Oh, it was a very serious development. I was at that time in New York. I was back in New York. When this happened, we received a very urgent cable, and we were all worried. The UN in Leopoldville was worried, and the UN in New York was extremely worried. It is at that point that Takamashu suggested the establishment of a UN conciliation commission composed of the African and Asian representatives of contributing countries.
You think that was inspired then by Lumumba's departure, by the problems?
Yes, and the arrest of Lumumba.
Yeah.
The detention of Lumumba.
Now, could you comment a little bit on the whereabouts of the UN forces at this point? This has been somewhat controversial, I think. The UN guards were aware when Lumumba left, but did you know where he was going, which direction he went in?
Yeah, well, he left very early one morning. We were aware that he was leaving, but as I said, we were not, the UN soldiers were not to restrict his freedom of movement in any way. We didn't know where he was leaving. Only later, we learned that he was proceeding towards Stanleyville, where his followers, including Gizenga, the deputy prime minister in his government, that they had established a provisional government in Stanleyville. So he was going there, apparently, to take over the new de facto government.
Was there also a question of the death of his daughter at that point?
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. The daughter died, and one of the reasons he gave was to attend to the funeral of the daughter. Yes, absolutely. Now, he was arrested somewhere in the Kasai, near Port Frankie. I understand that when he went into a village, he was making a speech, and then he was discovered. And there were a strong ANC, pro-Mobutu group, who went there and arrested him.
And how soon were you aware in Leopoldville that this arrest had taken place?
Or just 1 or 2 days later.
1 or 2 days later.
Yes.
And then he ended up in Elizabethville, is that right?
Tisville.
Tisville.
In Tisville there is a big ANC camp,
uh-huh.
And he was detained in Tisville.
Right. Were there United Nations soldiers there who saw his arrival there in Tisville?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But we know that he was detained in Tisville. And I know that in particular because I was the secretary to the Conciliation Commission, which was sent to achieve conciliation, but also with the immediate goal to try to see Lumumba and try to get him liberated.
What was the real purpose of the Conciliation Commission? Was it the conciliation between the two factions, that is, between...
But more than two factions,
yeah.
Is just to achieve a national reconciliation. Now, at that time, the Congo was divided into four de facto governments. You have the Chombe secessionists in Elizabethville, in Katanga. We had another secession in Kasai, led by Kalonji. As I said earlier, Lumumbists with Kisenga had a de facto government in Stanleyville, and finally in Leopoldville we have the Kazavubu Mobutu group. By that time, Mobutu has already established a college des commissaires, the college of commissioners. He had decided to take over, and he appointed a government. It was a government composed of university graduates, and that was called the College of Commissioners. So you have four de facto governments at that time. The aim of the Conciliation Commission is to conciliate to the various leaders and to help re-establish the national unity government in Leopold.
And you tried to see Lumumba then at that point?
As soon as we arrived in Leopoldville, that's at the very beginning of 1961, we went to see President Kazavubu, and we told him in no uncertain terms that we must see Lumumba.
But this did not succeed?
No. Well, Kazavubu hedged. He said, he would do whatever he could to arrange a meeting, but it was very difficult. There were many problems. He needed some time, so we saw him almost every day, and every day we urged him to arrange the meeting, but he never did. He always hedged and telling us that some problem had to be resolved before he could arrange for a meeting. And then finally we learned that Lumumba escaped from his camp. As you know, that later on we learned that he was brutally murdered in Katanga.
Yes. Did you also try to see Chombe at this point?
It was the commission's aim to see all the leaders.
Right.
While we were in Leopoldville, we saw naturally Kazavubu, because he was still the president. And as you know, in the General Assembly, they
assembly recognized the delegation sent by Kasavubu as the legitimate delegation. So Kasavubu was the president, and he was very the only political leaders generally recognized. So we saw Kasavubu, and we saw a number of other leaders, including Abdullah. Abdullah, who was a senator, was one of the best. He was reasonable, he was intelligent, and he very much wanted to save the Congo. And we give him a lot of time and attention.
Now, it was just about this time, if I'm not mistaken, that the administration changed in Washington.
That's right, yes.
That President Kennedy became the president, yes. And Adlai Stevenson became the permanent representative. Did you, in the Congo, or for that matter in New York, detect fairly soon a change in U.S. policy toward the Congo?
Yes, yes. I'm. There was no doubt that we detected a change for the better, and also more help for the UN operation in the Congo.
So it was a more positive attitude.
A more positive attitude.
But still strong support. Well, at this point, was it for Kasavubu or for Mobutu?
There were, I think, four Kasavubu Mobutu.
Right.
Of course, there is a good reason, because Kasavubu was with the president recognized by the General Assembly. But certainly, I think the sympathy went to them.
And on the question of Katanga, was a difference in attitude seen there, or was the American attitude already in favor of the reintegration of Katanga?
Yes, there's a change there too.
Change there.
Before, but the U.S. was never for the secession. The policy was also against the secession. But there was a degree in the support given to the UN in its effort to fight secession. Certainly after Kennedy took over, we received much more support, moral and material.
Now, for a more general question, as you mentioned earlier, the United Nations civilian operation played a very important part in the administration of the Congo at this time after the departure of many Belgians. How effective was that? How effective did you think the UN performance was?
I think it was quite effective, particularly in light of the very difficult situation prevailing there. At that time, everything collapsed. The ministries were not functioning. The electricity, the water companies were not functioning. The essential services were badly disrupted. So when we went in, we sent first technicians for the most important organizations and bodies. We appointed a very distinguished economist, financier from Switzerland, Victor Umbricht, to be the chief economic advisor. And he was appointed by the Congolese government as the head of the Monetary Council, which is a kind of a central bank. And he therefore was directing the economy of the Congo and the Monetary Council. And in fact, it's much thanks to his effort that the Congolese currency held its value during all this, during the first phase of the UN operation. And we have the advisors in every main ministry to advise the ministers. And we have technicians for the electricity company, the water company, the transport, Otraco, and in fact everywhere.
And this was really essential to keep the country
absolutely from collapsing.
And the UN did well, in your opinion, then.
I believe that it was essential. You see, we enabled the country to continue.
Now, I'd like to move, because this tape is almost over, to one really final question. This has to do with the Secretary General Hammarskjöld's, I guess you'd say, determination to see Tshombe. Presumably, in pursuit of the same objective as the Conciliation Commission, that is to somehow bring an end to the secession. And
Yes, well, Hamasho's the plan.
Yeah.
He said that I'm here to help the Congo. The UN force can do much directly to facilitate or bring about the withdrawal of the Belgian troops. But the UN cannot deal with the secession, the problem of secession, because it's an internal question. But the UN can help in two ways. Since the secession was brought about with the help of Belgium, Belgium advisors, the Belgian military, after all, secession was declared on the very day when the Belgian troops invaded the Congo and Katanga. By eliminating the Belgian influence, military and political, I prepare the ground for national conciliation. And then we can push the national conciliation. That is, get Tshombe to reconcile, to change his position towards the government, and thereby...